Morning, everyone. We're going to be looking at the two readings today. Peter's miraculous escape from prison. Wow, what a reading, what an account. What a story. There are lots of themes in this escape. What we could consider is the importance of prayer, for one thing. There's the vulnerability of mere secular power. There's the handing over of leadership by Peter to James. And there's the sheer awesome power of God. But today, I think I'd like to focus on the different relationships with God brought out by this incredible story and what it could mean for us today here in London. But let's look at it first as a story. And again, I say, wow, what a story. The account of Peter's miraculous escape has everything you could wish for in a real-life adventure story. It's a mixture of James Bond, Jason Bourne, and the Marvel film franchise, all rolled into one rollicking account. It'd make a great film, full of tension, full of twists, and a happy outcome. It's got a clear hero at its center, Peter. Peter, who's really important in God's plan for the future of church. Peter, the rock on which the church is being built. It's Peter that's increasingly taken the lead in the early church. He's been making the decisions. He's been leading the preaching. He's been reaching out to the Gentiles, including Cornelius, even attending Cornelius' house, as we heard last week. He's helping to evangelize and grow the young Christian church. Under his leadership, fantastic progress. It was beginning to look as if nothing could stop this surge in growth, this surge in coming to know Jesus, the surge in those hearing the teachings and responding. It was a time of rapid change in the church. It was an exciting time. Saul had turned from fierce persecutor to Paul, ardent advocate. The faith was now being preached beyond the Jews to the Gentiles. The church was growing very rapidly. In Acts 11, it says, the church was growing and spread already to Phoenicia, Cyprus, and Antioch. And indeed, the preaching was increasingly being noticed, particularly by the traditional Jews in Jerusalem itself. It's a story with tragedy. James's death is described very briefly by the sword. Now, all good stories, of course, have that moment in the film when the close friend of the hero suddenly gets killed. It's usually that moment when somebody says, it's very quiet here tonight, nothing's going to happen, and suddenly somebody dies. It's a death that racks up dramatic tension in the film and shows the seriousness of the situation. It shows how serious Peter's position really was. It's a story with a definite and very clear villain, isn't it? Herod is a truly nasty piece of work. If he was portrayed in a film, he'd be a dastardly villain, no doubt all dressed in black, twirling a moustache and scowling. Herod was the grandson of that Herod the Great, who ordered the slaughter of the baby boys when Jesus was born. So villainy, remember, runs deep in his family. From his authorizing of the killing of James in verse 2, to wanting to curry favor with the Jews, the establishment, in verse 3, to his plan to destroy Peter, and to his bad-tempered reaction in ordering the execution of the guards, Herod is bad through and through. And he gets his comeuppance, his retribution. We haven't read that bit, but in verse 23, in a satisfyingly gruesome fashion, an angel of the Lord strikes him down, and he's eaten by worms and dies implicitly through intestinal problems. It's recorded elsewhere by Josephus that he dies 5 days later, so his ending must have been painful, prolonged, and pitiful. And then finally, it also got us in this account, this story, because we're represented by the church, the young church, many of whom have gathered at the house of Mary, the mother of John, praying desperately for Peter's safety. Now, Peter, our hero, is really up against it at the beginning of this chapter. He's in chains, tied on both sides to what are probably two very big, burly, rough and tough soldiers. No doubt great, strong guys who would prevent any escape. I like to imagine that one of the guard on his left has a vicious sword scar across his face, and the one on the other side a broken nose. Now Peter, the reason that Herod is so worried and the security is so tight is that Peter's got previous form for escaping. In Acts 5, the apostles, including Peter, were put in the public jail and they escaped. Verses 18 to 20 of Acts 5 say they arrested the apostles and they put them in the public jail. But during the night, an angel of the Lord opened the doors of the jail and brought them out. "Go stand in the temple courts," he said, "and tell people the full message of this new life." And again in Acts 4, Peter and John managed to get out of prison. So for this high security prisoner, this highly dangerous individual in Herod and the Jews' eyes, extra special security measures were in place. Four squads of four soldiers, that's 16 soldiers, were directed to guard Peter at all times. At all times, four were on duty. Two were to be chained to him, and two were to guard the doors. Peter's not going to be allowed to escape this time. Now, prison's pretty tough, even in jails today. I hate to think what it was like then. Solitary confinement with the two guards, food atrocious, damp, dirt, smell, decay, horrific. And Peter may have suffered beatings too. He was totally at the mercy of the guards. So the tension is high, very high. He's held in prison during the Passover because religious law did not allow the courts to sit or executions be carried out during the Passover. And executing Peter was exactly what our villain Herod had in mind, to bring Peter out for public trial immediately after the Passover and to do to Peter what he'd already done to James, to put Peter to death. So, in verse 6, it's the night before Herod was to bring him to trial. What had Peter been thinking all these days, chained on each side to a heavily armed soldier? He'd been rescued before by divine intervention, but that had been immediate, that escape. He'd been in prison, heavily guarded throughout the Passover for several days. The trial was next day. Maybe he was in low spirits. Maybe he thought it was God's will that he should die this time. Suddenly, and dramatically, he wakes up from a deep sleep by a light glow. There's a mysterious light in what was probably a totally dark cell. The chains fall off his wrist. But the two soldiers continue to sleep. Is he dreaming? Is this a hallucination? He's told to get dressed, and then he's taken straight out of the prison, going straight past the two other guards, and then through the huge iron gate to the city, which opens mysteriously. What a dramatic, not so much supernatural, but super godlike escape from a tough jail. And it's only now that Peter realizes who has helped him, why he's been rescued, and what he's got to do next. And so he goes to Mary's house. And here we've even got in our story a touch of comedy. The knocking on the door, Rhoda the servant recognizing Peter, telling the others, and the others refusing to believe it. She kept insisting, he said in verse 15. So this can have gone on for some time. I can imagine this being a gift to lighten the tension if it was a film. And how foolish those Christians must have felt when they did open the door and saw Peter there. So it's a great, rich, and varied drama. It's worthy of a good production. But whilst the story of Peter's escape reads like a thriller, an adventure film, let's look a little deeper, shall we? Let's look at what the reading can tell us of the various players' different relationships with God. What we can learn from it today. Let's take James first. He's not talked about very much. He's just briefly referred to as having been put to the sword. That's thought to mean that he was beheaded. Now, a church historian, Eusebius, credits James with having so impressed the centurion in charge of him that that centurion was himself converted and in the end killed too for his new faith. Remember what Jesus said to the disciples in Matthew 24, verse 9. "Then you'll be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you'll be hated by all nations because of me. And at that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other, and many false prophets will appear and deceive the people. wise words of Jesus in Matthew 24. James was willing, and he did die for his faith. He accepted God's will in this respect. Are we living in a time where we may be faced by such a dilemma? Certainly others are in other parts of the world. We've got the hateful ideology of ISIS destroying Christians where and where they can. We've got the attacks on Christian Coptic and churches and their people. We've got the atrocity in Barcelona, in Finland, Turku in Finland, and in Russia very recently. And there are plenty of false prophets around today, as Jesus foresaw, from Western materialism to those who argue that news is fake. Let's respect James and honour him for his martyrdom. It was not God's will in his case that he would escape and survive. And he became an early church martyr. Are we ready, if called, to lay down our lives similarly for the truth? Now let's look at Herod, the villain of this story. At one level, he's a powerful king with soldiers at his bidding, determined to stamp out the new faith of Christianity. But let's look a bit more closely. He's a bit of a coward, really, isn't he? He's a bully. He's trying to curry favour with the Jewish establishment, who wanted to destroy the church now that it was opening up to the Gentiles. He does what he thinks other people want him to do. It's a weak man's position. In verse 3 it says, when he saw that this pleased the Jews, namely the arrest and killing of James, he proceeded to seize Peter too. So Herod wanted to be liked and was willing to do despicable things to achieve that. There's no sign anywhere that he genuinely thought that Peter and James deserved the punishment of death. And wanting to be liked, wanting to stay in power at all costs, wanting to be acclaimed for the popular action, is not that far from putting yourself in the place of God himself. And do you know what he does? He does that in verse 23. The people started to talk of him as having the voice of a god, and he responded to their acclaim. So he was struck down, and he was eaten by worms, and he died. Herod is an interesting contrast with Paul, who persecuted Christians not for his own glory or to increase his popularity, but through misguided belief. Paul, was given the chance to change his ways, but Herod was struck down for his arrogance, his selfishness, and his vainglorious desire for popularity. Are we able to avoid similar temptations like Herod? Are we prepared to avoid easy popularity and applause? Are we prepared to put aside our personal ambitions for Jesus, to actively court unpopularity, disdain, or criticism? Now let's look at Peter. Peter, who was uncharacteristically quiet and passive in this account, he's normally much more active in the stories. He seems to have been awaiting his fate, leaving it in God's hands. He hasn't been rescued quickly as before. He's still there, heavily guarded, the night before the expected trial. No doubt he was thinking about his own execution. He knew what happened to James. He was sleeping. Shows he was calm, at one with himself. Suddenly he's woken up by a blow to his side, probably a rapid shake. Gets up, as instructed. The chains have fallen away. He gets dressed in his clothes and sandals. He wraps his cloak around himself. The soldiers are still sleeping. Is this real? It's not until Peter was befuddled by sleep, had gone past the two sets of guards, through the now open iron gate, and had walked the length of the street that he wakes up. And at last he realizes what is happening. As it says in verse 11, now I know, without a doubt, that the Lord sent his angel and rescued me from Herod's clutches and from everything the Jewish people had been anticipating. So, what does he do next? Does he flee? Does he run as fast and far away as he can now that he's been saved? No, he doesn't, actually. Being the calm elder statesman of the church that he he is, Peter goes straight to where he expects people to be gathered. So he can tell his story, his miraculous story. So he can encourage the young church. So the account of his escape from prison can be told far and wide. That must have been a really dangerous thing to do. It's the obvious place that Herod's soldiers would go first. But he felt he had a duty to tell the members of the church to ensure that the news was told to James and the other brothers. And then, knowing that God had released him from prison for a reason, a purpose, for continued teaching, he does finally go away, and it says he left for another place. So do we have Peter's strong faith? Do we have a willingness to put our lives in God's hands? Are we ready to do Jesus' work, even if that exposes us to dangers like Peter? Do we have that sense of responsibility, as Peter had, that we would put ourselves at risk? And of course, finally, do you think we'd recognize an angel if one was sent to help us? And finally, let's put ourselves in the position of the young church. Are we able to pray strenuously for the rescue of others? Can we pray hard enough? Can we learn from the Christians gathered at the house of Mary? Are we too sometimes reluctant or incapable to see the answer to our prayers? To see the unexpected way that God has answered? Do we sometimes hear, maybe metaphorically, a knocking at the door and refuse to believe that it's God calling us? God having responded to our prayer? God with a message? Jesus taught us in Luke 12, with the parable of the servants waiting for their master to return. He said in verse 40, you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. Are we ready? Are we prepared for when he does come? So looking at the examples of response in this wonderful story of Peter's miraculous escape from prison, are we prepared to be like James, suffer for our faith? Can we avoid being like Herod, putting personal ambition, power, desire for easy popularity ahead of justice, honesty, and faithfulness? Can we learn from Peter's humility and his trust in the Lord? Can we replicate his willingness to do whatever and go wherever is necessary for God? Can we learn from that early church, not only to pray, but also how to recognize answers to prayers? So thinking of Peter and of James, Herod and the young church, what do you feel of your own relationship with God? How do you think you might respond if you hear him call to you?